Welcome to Blacksiders, the no-holds-barred conversation about news and current affairs that we like talking about. I'm Gemma McKinnon.
And I'm Petey McGillifrey.
Petey, what's happening?
I have had a big week. It's the week of the lady cycle.
Oh, I thought this was some sort of bicycle event.
No, the lady cycle.
The crimson wave.
The crimson wave. And, you know, it's just, it's hard. It is hard, even at my age, to just ride that wave some months. And it's been a big week. But I do what I have to do. And it's, you know, here we are.
I am woman.
And, you know, given that we had International Women's Day.
International Cupcake Week.
International, so many cupcakes. The eating of the morning teas really helped in the week.
Absolutely. Especially the Princess Leia cupcakes at 2SCR.
Yum. The ones that look like broadcasting headphones? Earphones.
Yeah. Are they buns? Are they headphones?
Both.
Yum.
How about your week, Gemma? How have you been?
It's been fine. You know what was super cute is that two of my kids in year four, they had their very first school disco.
Oh, they still do the disco.
So they didn't have them at their last school, but this new school is very, the new school is very old school. And they had, so it was from 7:30 to 8:30, and they had a sausage sizzle, and they all got a lolly bag and a bottle of water, and yeah, just dance up a storm. And what was so cute is when we picked them up, we heard the last two songs, and the last two songs they played were Taylor Swift's Shake It Off, obviously, because that's a real hit with everybody. And then I'm Still Standing by Elton John, and the kids all knew the words.
Wow.
So I feel like they must have done some sort of, I don't know whether they learned it at music.
Yeah, like they did some sort assembly of song
assembly song.
Yeah.
But they were all screaming, like, you know, like little kids like squeal.
Yeah.
I'm Still Standing by Elton John. So that was a real,
I mean, that's such a banger. I'm so happy to hear that the kids know that one and love it.
Right? It was so good. And, you know, 8:30 on a, I don't know what day it was, a day in the middle of the week.
Midweek disco.
Yeah, it was like Thursday? I don't know. What, some night?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I don't even go out during the week
anymore. I know. They had to pull up the next day and go to school.
There you go. I mean, I quite like the normalizing of a going out on a school night, it being, you know, not a rager. You just go home to bed and
maybe that's why they're doing it.
Yeah.
Trying to get the, just have a bottle of water and a sausage sizzle.
Yeah, and get to bed.
Have a little dance and then be home by nine.
Sorry, I just have one more curious question about the disco. Was it all ages or was it, did they break it up into the first?
They did. They broke it up. Mm. So K-2, their disco was from 6:30 till 7:30.
Cute.
And then 3 to 6, the big kids.
The big kids who got to stay out till,
yeah,
till
8:30.
Oh, I love that. I haven't been to the disco in ages.
The like outfit choice was really important. How they did their hair. It was just, it brought back a lot of memories.
I love it.
But if our school discos only went for an hour, I would never have danced because it always took me a good hour at least, maybe hour and a half to warm up.
Yeah, I'm nodding furiously at this because you were shy. You were always shy for the first at least half an hour.
Yeah.
Just looking at everyone. What are they going to do? What are they going to do? Who's going to be the first to break it out?
And then you finally get into it and then your mom's there.
Yeah, it's time to go.
So I hope they had a good time.
Oh, I love it.
My daughter wore, she's so eclectic with her outfit. So she wore like a sporty t-shirt dress sort of thing with some glitter sneakers. And then she wore a, what is it, Zara for men? Is that, men's Zara are like black suit jacket.
Oh, like a blazer.
Yeah.
The blazer look.
Yes. And it was like the one that my 17-year-old son wore to like a formal or something. She wore that over the top. And it was sort of like a tuxedo dress kind of look. It was very cool, I thought.
Very Paris Fashion Week.
Yes. And then my son just went in his school uniform. He just wanted to act like very...
My mum made me come to this. I wasn't even going to come.
Yeah, yeah. I just like didn't even bother getting dressed because whatever.
Yeah, this is a school thing. Why would I express myself in my
too cool for school.
Yeah.
So... let's have a yarn about something that I came to my attention. Well, it's been to my attention for some time, but this week I went to a rap summit. And by rap, I do not mean Snoop Dogg. I mean a Reconciliation Action Plan summit. And the keynote speech there was very, very interesting to me.
Do you want to give our listeners just a quick little rundown of what a Reconciliation Action Plan is?
Okay. This is a show in itself, I do have to say, but let's start there. A Reconciliation Action Plan is a action plan, a strategy that an organization develops within a framework set by Reconciliation Australia. They aim to address or further the cause of reconciliation within businesses by assisting those businesses to set targets around targets and goals around things like cultural awareness training, employment, First Nations procurement targets, having particular governance structures around this work, and as much as possible, trying to have this plan as something that's been adopted by the whole organization, championed by the leaders of that organization, and then you report back to Reconciliation Australia on a regular basis about your progress in meeting the goals in the plan.
Okay, so the plan provides a very tangible roadmap of sorts of how that organization very practically is employing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, using Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander businesses in the running of its organization or its business, and then perhaps thinking more strategically about how that organization is engaging externally in the community in all kinds of different ways, potentially.
Yes, and I think that there are around 3,000 businesses in Australia that have reconciliation action plans, including government departments, schools, universities, so not strictly private business necessarily, but they've been around for, I would say, around 20 years now.
Yeah, so quite a well-established and embedded practice of, you know, bringing some of these very practical achievements of, you know, incorporating Indigenous Australia into, you know, corporate Australia and government institutions and mainstream Australia.
Yes,
generally.
Yes. And I think they came about around the same time as a certain Prime Minister's practical reconciliation focus. Mm-hmm. So it is very much practical in its attempts at reconciliation.
And I feel like we'll get into some of that in this conversation.
Absolutely. And it is a very, I guess, 101 basic kind of approach to reconciliation. If you are starting from a base of absolutely nothing,
people might describe it as the bare minimum.
Yeah. Then a reconciliation action plan is the way to go, a good starting point. How these RAPs are, there's a journey that you go on. Obviously, when you're starting out as an organization, you're going to have different types of goals to when you've been doing this for 10 plus years. So they call the framework the RISE framework. R stands for reflect, I innovate, S stretch, and E elevate. So this summit that I was at this week was a meeting of RAP lead, like organizations that lead in the RAP space. So it was organizations that have elevate and stretch RAPs.
Right. So they're organizations that are quite far along their journey and taking their organization through the process of actually pushing and doing more as the years that they've followed the process.
That's right. There's definitely an expectation when you go from, so a RAP usually lasts about 3 years, that when you're going from one to the next, that you are setting higher goals for you to reach. And once you get to the elevate stage of the RAP, so I think there's sort of maybe 25 elevate RAPs. There's not a lot at all when we're thinking there's 3,000 altogether. And I, you know, around 25 elevates, those organizations need to go through a sort of like peer review process, an EOI. So you're not kind of guaranteed that you will be, that your RAP will be endorsed at a particular level. Those standards are set by Reconciliation Australia.
Curious question. What kind of RAP does Rio Tinto have?
I don't think that Rio Tinto have a RAP.
Ah, okay.
And I think the reason for that was, we may have to edit this out if I'm wrong. I don't think they have a RAP because I think they were actually, I don't know if I can say kicked out, asked to leave. No, told to leave the RAP community after the Juukan Gorge.
I've got a feeling that they had one.
Yes, yes, yeah. So they did get kicked out of the RAP community.
Because there was a kind of collective understanding that you can't have a RAP or that there's an inconsistency there, perhaps.
The same thing happened to Telstra.
Right.
Though I believe they might be sort of reconciling. That was, I didn't even do that on purpose, but.
They're getting back together.
Yeah.
Reconciliation and Telstra.
Yeah.
They're working things out.
They're figuring it out. You know, it takes time, it takes communication. Telstra. The jokes are just flowing tonight. I love it. So, anyway, if that's.
I think that, that's really helpful. Yeah.
Okay. So, I was at this meeting and the keynote speaker was talking about the landscape of reconciliation. And when I say reconciliation, I'm talking about what I sort of refer to as corporate reconciliation. So what the RAP world, basically, what business is doing to contribute to reconciliation more broadly. So we were talking about the landscape of reconciliation post-referendum. And so this had been the first meeting of RAP leaders since the referendum. And I think it was very timely and something that people were very excited about doing. That is, having conversations with other people, with other businesses about, well, what do we do if we've made commitments to reconciliation as organizations, but post-referendum, A, we've seen First Nations people say reconciliation is dead. How can we be engaging in a process of reconciliation which is supposed to involve two parties when we now have this referendum outcome which basically says that the other party by and large isn't interested in coming to the table on it? How does that process work when there's supposed to be two parties involved but somebody sort of doesn't want to participate? Two, when we post-referendum don't necessarily or haven't been hearing from the people who were guiding us during the referendum to say, this is what we want, we're very clear about it, here's our mandate, here's where it's from, this is, you know, this is what we are asking you to do. what do you do as an organization when you've had that sort of clear mandate from the leaders of the Yes campaigns, telling organizations what they want, where they're sort of heading to? And now since the referendum, we've kind of had silence around that. So we don't necessarily have the people that, the people that these businesses are used to hearing from, providing them with that guidance anymore. And also, I think just generally, it's a climate of, particularly for people that work in corporate Australia or in really large businesses, for those First Nations people, I think it's fair to say that there is a bit of, I don't know, concern, a bit of maybe mistrust within workplaces, within society, around the fact that when you enter a room, when you enter your workplace, your office, you can kind of, feel reasonably confident that a fair few of the people that you work with voted no in the referendum. And now your organization might be a bit tenuous around what its commitments are around reconciliation. So I think it creates a bit of a sense of skepticism and fear in First Nations people that maybe they didn't have pre-referendum. So that's the landscape in which we were having this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And the keynote speaker was very observant of all of these factors, and not in any way trying to mince their words around the reality of the situation, which is, pretty grim.
Was the keynote speaker an Indigenous person or non-Indigenous
person? Yes, Indigenous person. And I think, when you're in these sorts of spaces, I think a lot of the time people are trying to amp you up, right? They're trying to have you leave this meeting having some level of energization, is that a word? But, a renewed sort of sense of purpose and direction and focus in the work that you're doing. And so I guess I expected somebody to sort of be coming to the table and saying, you can't give up yet. There's hope there. Let's do this, this, and this. But actually, they were very, very real in their reading of the situation that we're in at the moment. And where they sort of, I guess, pitched their solution was very interesting to me, where basically because of the lack of appetite for structural reform, for social policy reform, they were saying in that space, in the sort of law and justice space, there's not really a lot of hope there at the moment, because what we've seen from the referendum is that there's, no appetite from the community, that the government are now hesitant to act, and there's not a lot of leadership really anywhere sort of providing a way forward. So where the focus can be and where we actually have a level of control is around economic development. And then they went on, to promote the idea of having more Blackfellas on boards and talking about how businesses can learn a great deal and get a lot out of having more Blackfellas on their boards. But this is sort of not a new idea, right? The idea of this focus on economic empowerment. And we can sort of, and when I talk about that, I'm talking about the Indigenous business sector and government putting a lot of money into the Indigenous business sector and supporting First Nations entrepreneurship. like I said, RAPS, one of the key elements of it is around First Nations procurement targets. So how much you're spending with First Nations businesses, and there's a whole industry behind First Nations businesses and standards set, particularly within government departments, around when they're putting contracts out for tender. They require other businesses, construction companies or whatever it is, to report on how much money they're spending with First Nations businesses. And also there's a lot of joint ventures popping up. So big businesses that then establish a First Nations majority owned or 50% owned sort of, offshoot. So, Pete, what I want to talk about is the idea of economic empowerment and whether this, and it is, as I said, increasingly popular sort of focus area for people. Is this a solution to a better future for First Nations people? I'll get your initial assessment first, and then I want to pose a couple of questions. So what do you think generally? Because I know you've heard about this before. It's not a new concept to you.
No, there's no revelations in this idea of focusing on economic development. And it's actually, is it useful? I think it's a politically useful idea when, if we were to take a short-term view about how we get politicians and governments to care about Indigenous policy, then economic policy is one way to do it. Because when we think about broader Australian political values, we can use language that most people understand and that most people can relate to, and most people would say, yeah, okay, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people experience inequality worse than most Australians, and so that kind of makes sense to say, well, that's really, poverty is the thing that we have to focus on, and alleviating that is, should be where we're putting our work. And we hear that from politicians when they say, but if the solution isn't about closing the gap, then is it even worth our while? And of course, you and I would be familiar with, being wheeled out as the examples of, how affirmative action or other strategies to, increase salaries and be able to buy homes and all of those types of things, what that looks like.
Yeah.
I think the challenge for us is that solving or addressing intergenerational social disadvantage isn't about individuals in one lifetime, when in reality it's not one lifetime, actually. It's been three or four generations for both of us of what it's taken for us to be in this position right now, and a lot of social policy, mind you, behind that as well, to actually get different outcomes. And on scale, it's going to take a lot more. So it's this idea of kind of immediate political, what's politically useful as concepts and ideas versus what we know to be the structural drivers of disadvantage.
And this is it, right? I think the conversation that I had during this summit and in talking to people about this after hearing this speech was that where the Uluru Statement from the Heart came from was from this, sense of powerlessness, that over generations, over the decades, we have seen, policy come and go, legislation come and go, initiatives to tackle what are essentially the symptoms and the need for structural reform to actually nip it in the bud, right? To actually tackle the root cause of the problem, which is the fact that from a structural perspective within the country, we're not sitting on equal footing with everybody else.
One of the things that we're, you know, that structural reform does is recognize the collective rights of Indigenous people. Focusing on economic empowerment with in the absence of any type of structural recognition of Indigenous peoples collectively basically requires Indigenous Australia to be operating at the same level as everybody else. And that means that it'll take us, according to the Closing the Gap targets, another 80 years to have parity with, and not even parity, not even parity, just a little bit less shit than it currently is across every social measure. So for me, that's why I am completely uninspired by this idea of economic empowerment, because every black fella that's going to benefit is not who we are trying to effect change for in the future. We are talking because we know from all of the analysis that's been done about the measures of social disadvantage for Indigenous people in this country at the very bottom, that number is getting bigger and bigger. And so the idea that, you know, emancipation comes from participating in mainstream political economy for as an immediate thing that's going to change anything, I think is another form of delusionment.
Mic drop. You know what I want to do is I want to keep talking about this.
Yeah.
But we're running out of time.
Are we going to do maybe a two-parter?
Should we do a two-parter? I think what I want to do is, yeah, come have some time to think and digest. And then I want to come back next week and keep talking about this because I think it's a really important topic and something that we probably need to grapple with a little bit at the moment because we are finding ourselves in a bit of a vacuum.
Absolutely. And I think that this is and the reason why we should come back to it is because, you know, this is something that affects so many people in this country, blackfellas, and of course, all of the other non-Indigenous people who are experiencing, you know, entrenched social disadvantage in this country, of which it's getting worse every single year. I think it is worthwhile coming back and to continue to yarn about it.
You're listening to Blacksiders on 2SER, and you've come at a perfect time because we have just decided that we're going to do our first ever two-part episode. So unfortunately, you'll have to wait until next week to hear more thoughts on us from us on this topic. But I do still want to end with a thumbs up, thumbs down, because I got a lot to complain about.
Please. And we last week we decided that we would start with thumbs down and end on a high note.
Got to end on a high. So do you want to hit me with your thumbs down?
Okay. My thumbs down is that sanitary items, tampons, pads, are still not free. I think that they should be free for everyone.
I agree. They're super expensive.
They're really expensive. I don't think it's a particularly radical idea.
Are there countries that give them for free?
I wish I knew the answer to that.
There are definitely more businesses that are making them available for free in their bathrooms. I'm very pro that.
Yeah, and I would give a shout out to the small NGOs that actually make sure that sanitary items and products are available for women and girls because of the cost of them. So that would be my call to action that goes with my thumbs down this week, is to look up your local neighbourhood effort to get these items available for women and girls who can't afford them.
My thumbs down this week is a serious thumbs down, which is that my son got racially abused on the bus on the way to school this week by an adult member of the public.
Oh my God.
I just am so gooped. Like, firstly, he's like 8 years old. Who
get a life.
Right? Like, what is happening with you that you feel that you need to hurl racial abuse at a child at 8:30 in the morning? I don't know. But also the fact that nobody else on the bus said anything, did anything to help him. Yeah. Boo earns.
Ugh, that is so disgusting.
Just a real thumbs down, honestly. Just that there's no upstanders.
Yeah.
And we need more upstanders.
More upstanders, for sure. I mean, in the situation where I was on the bus and I witnessed that, I would absolutely have a go at that adult.
Oh, mate.
Like, do not make your problems anyone else's problems, especially not a child.
I would be probably locked up.
Yeah.
I reckon. I'd what, cut
throwing
sick.
Hands. Throwing yeah. hands. yeah.
Anyway, sorry. It's been a week.
It's been a week.
But he did get a disco, so, you know.
Yeah. Swings and roundabouts.
Yeah. Thumbs up.
Well, my thumbs up, of course, and it, you know, is in relation to our little friend who had a bad time on the bus. It's Sam Kerr.
Oh, yes.
Thumbs up on Sam Kerr having a saying cussing out a police officer.
Absolutely. How worried were you?
I mean, there was a collective sigh of relief, wasn't there, really, when we heard that that copper was white. We were all so relieved. Any of you weren't, go and have a good hard look at yourself.
I honestly, that entire was like 24 hours, I was like, do we have to hate Sam Kerr now? What's happening? I was very stressed. We have a biography at our, you know, my kids love reading about her. My daughter does her hair the same way that Sam Kerr does it. They're all obsessed. And if we had to, what is it?
Cancel her.
We would have been in some trouble. So yeah. Thank God.
And I'm so happy that her team is pursuing that, the prosecution of her as being frivolous and unnecessary, because he probably is a bastard.
Go Chelsea. Hey, sports.
Sports ball. Run, kick the ball.
Touchdown. My thumbs up for this week is going to be, I cannot believe that I'm going to say this, but I really like that I'm going to say most, although maybe I'm, you know, living in a bubble, but that most businesses these days have employee assistance programs.
Nice.
Where you can get free counseling, psychology, paid for. Well, it's not free. It's free to you, but paid for by your work. I think that's a massive thumbs up. Something that we don't really think about too much, I don't think. But it's just being somebody who has, like, struggled to pay for psychologists.
Yeah.
Knowing all of the people that I know that damn really need to get themselves to a counsellor and can't because it's prohibitively expensive.
Yes.
To know that you at least have some assistance, that there's some level of accountability for employers.
Yeah.
That actually they are a lot of the time the root cause.
Yeah.
For our
That's a very practical reconciliation action plan set of actions, actually, is just getting your Indigenous staff counselling, cultural supervision, all of those types of things.
Because we need it. Hey!
We bloody need it. But on the mental health stuff, I am always so impressed by mental health services and teams and tools and resources that are accessible. It's so excellent to see. Beyond Blue does some excellent stuff. They have a mental health resource at the moment for small business owners, which is super cool if there's anybody out there who wants to check that out. But, yeah, employees making it available is a huge thumbs up.
Yeah. Practical achievement that I think is something that we should celebrate a little bit.
Absolutely. Boring self-care, more of it.
Yay. That is all we have time for this week, but I'm so excited to finish this conversation next week. I cannot wait to read the angry text messages and emails that we get from First Nations entrepreneurs everywhere.
I know.
Sorry, actually, we do love you.
We do love you. And we also love getting paid. So don't get that twisted either.
Love money. Big fan. Big fan
of money. Big fan of meeting my basic material needs. But I think that there is something to interrogate further here. So let's do that
next week. See you.
Good night, Gem.